Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Ethos Capital's Results Conference Call. All participants will be in listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity to ask questions when prompted. If you should need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by pressing star and then zero. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I'd now hand the conference over to Mr. Peter Hayward-Butt. Please go ahead, sir.
Thanks very much, and good morning to all our investors. Thanks very much for taking the time. What we've proposed to do today, if I just go to the, is to give you an introduction just briefly around some of the macros that we've been seeing, et cetera, not to focus too much on those, as I'm sure you see those all the time. To give you an overview of the portfolio and how it's been constructed and performing, some input into the valuations, and the liquidity analysis. And at the end, some sort of outlook for the portfolio. So moving briefly onto slide two, let me just put that up there. Whilst I'm sure you obviously get, as investors, a huge amount of input from many sources around the economy, one of the slides that we presented to our investors, the LPs, a couple of weeks back, that Stu McKenzie presented, was one that went back to the beginning of Fund Seven, so really effectively to the beginning of 2011 on page two, and just looked at some of the key issues that we've been facing over that period of time. So, and I think from a GDP growth rate perspective, and everyone's heard the story around the low GDP growth rates and the constant refining of the numbers downwards, I think the biggest issue that we've faced really over the last 4 or 5 years, as you can see in that chart, is actually less around where the GDP is, but more the volatility that the GDP is exhibiting. So, those quarterly declines, we're probably seeing six or seven of them over the last 3 or 4 years, 4 or 5 years, as opposed to, the trends that we've seen in the past. Again, on the right-hand side, you see some of the key cost drivers, so including, obviously, wage inflation, which is somewhere between 6 and 8%, depending whether you have a unionized workforce or not. You know, some of the other key drivers, whether it be the petrol price since 2011, electricity price, or the imported inflation through FX, have all been pretty difficult from an investing perspective. And the key issue from us is the ability to forecast and the uncertainty that comes with forecasting over a 7 or 8 year horizon, which we look to own those assets over. And then obviously the real focus has then been on what operating costs you can take out of the businesses. So what we'll touch on again today is exactly what has been happening in the portfolio. What have we as Ethos been doing in those portfolio companies to arrest, some of these key headwinds? But I think pretty importantly, what has come out of this, and we'll talk about it in the pipeline of each of the funds, is the opportunities that come out of this sort of environment are very significant. As I said before, we continue to see a pipeline that's probably never been as full as it has, but also with the ability to be relatively selective, whether it's about the types of assets we want to invest in, the prices we want to pay, or the capital structuring we put into those deals to ensure we get some sort of downside protection. So, whilst at the face of it, the macros are tough, it makes investing relatively difficult, we don't think it's a time to put our head in the sand. We really do see a lot of opportunities coming out of it. And what we'll try and take you through over the next couple of pages is, what are we seeing fund by fund? What are we seeing in the underlying assets? And actually spend a bit of time talking about some of the key portfolio companies to give you an idea of how those are all performing. Moving to slide three, just before we, get into the assets, just to give you an idea again, there's four key strategies that we have. The first one is the large equity fund, which is where really funds six and seven. The next is the mid-market fund, which is our black-owned management company that plays into the mid-market space in private equity. The next is the mezzanine fund, run by Phil Walter and Ngala. And the last one was the most recent addition at the back end of last year was the AI fund. So just before we delve into the funds, it's been a pretty busy year for Ethos. Ethos invested 2.6 billion rand during the course of the year. It also raised 2.9 billion rand in the various funds across funds 7, the MES fund, and the AI fund. So a busy year both on the investing side and the fundraising side. If we just take each of the fund's strategies in turn, the first one is the large equity fund. Fund 7 has had a decent year. Its NAV grew year on year, largely through new capital invested in that fund. EBITDA was slightly down in that fund. We'll go into, you know, the various assets that constitute that. But what was key is the two exits that have happened out of that fund. The first was Kevra at the back about a year and a half ago, and the second was this year with Eaton. Eaton's going to be a great exit for the fund. We'll go into a bit of detail on that asset. End up, those two assets together had a combined exit of more than 20% IRR, realized return with more than 2.2 times money back across those two deals. So again, I think gives comfort that even in a difficult environment like this, you know, we are seeing the ability to exit good quality assets, you know, make decent returns on those investments. The focus really for Fund 6 this year, which is the fund that is past its investing phase and really is starting to move into its harvesting phase, has really been on restructuring some of the portfolio companies. We'll touch on a couple of those, and really cost reductions across the portfolio. To give you some idea, you know, revenue across Fund 6 grew at about 6.5% year on year, but EBITDA across the portfolio companies on an attributable basis was slightly down year on year. And that's despite the cost savings of a run rate of about $350 million being extracted from the portfolio. I think the reduction would have been an incremental 10% reduction in EBITDA if those cost reduction practices hadn't taken place. So it's been a difficult environment to operate, as we all know, but I think we have seen some decent traction, and we'll touch a bit on which assets we've seen in that restructuring phase and which are turning around. Fund 7 really is an exciting phase. That's the new fund. It's got two deals in that fund. The first is Channel VAS. We'll touch a bit on that later. The second is Echo, which should close probably within the next month. And there really is a strong pipeline of opportunities. So that opportunity set I referred to earlier, given the current state of affairs, really has shown itself in Fund 7. And turning then to the mid-market fund, is now 65% invested. And the focus, if you look at the key assets that they've invested in across Echo, Gamatech, Synalytic, and Kevro, they've all performed relatively well. EBITDA across those portfolio companies is up relatively strongly. The three assets that remain under pressure are AutoZone, TwinSaver, and Easy Access. And we've actually highlighted those assets in the portfolio in this presentation, and we'll go through those in a bit more detail. I think importantly, given that they are 65% invested, the fund is very selective about what it's looking at. Their SA-based pipeline really is strong, but they can afford to be selective, and they have been so. So there's probably two or three assets that they in relatively detailed due diligence on, but they can afford to be selective on which assets they end up taking. On the mezzanine fund, a really strong pipeline across East Africa, you know, that really talks to structured equity growth capital. There's two transactions that are at the end of their negotiation phase, hopefully, and hopefully those deals will be announced, you know, probably in the next quarter or so. Chibuku, which is the asset that's in there currently, has had a difficult year operationally. There was significant rains in Malawi, as we knew, you know, as you know, this year, which obviously had a big impact on the distribution of the product. But other exogenous factors, including, you know, exports in from other countries without duties, et cetera, into Malawi. That said, you know, the business has recovered strongly, and, you know, certainly from our perspective, we're comfortable with where that asset is. So I think the difference in the MES fund, you know, they're looking at assets in countries that have a very strong GDP growth, but the key issue there really revolves around political and currency volatility, which is something we focus on intently. The other thing I think to note is, you know, I think it does take longer. Pipeline conversion in that space in East Africa does take longer to get done, and particularly the two assets that hopefully are nearing completion have been in the mix for a long time. So, you know, it just takes longer to get these assets over the line. The final strategy is the AI fund. It's had strong traction this year on fundraising, exceeded its initial estimates, and is looking to probably increase the size of that fund slightly. And we really have seen the differentiated impact that, you know, Roger and Nick working together with the Ethos teams has had on particularly Channel VAS and Vertice, which are co-investments that they've entered into with Fund 7. If you look at the new investment that they made in TymeBank, we'll touch on that later on. Again, an exciting opportunity, probably something that as a business Ethos wouldn't have done naturally without the inputs of, you know, of Roger and Nick and the expertise that they bring to the party. And we'll touch a bit on that that acquisition later on. So there's lots of exciting opportunities in this space. Again, just to reemphasize, the target for this fund is good businesses, solid businesses with the ability to differentiate or change a growth trajectory through AI. So this is not about, you know, VC or anything in that frame. It really is about taking good businesses and making them better, hopefully in partnership together with the Ethos funds through, you know, the application of AI. Moving on to slide four, just to give to the highlight of the operating results. Ethos Capital now has about 19 portfolio companies. We'll give you an overview of some of the key ones just now. The NAV per share grew to 11.34, which whilst we have had 12 quarterly growth in NAV since we listed, so every quarter has been an increase in NAV per share. You know, we are obviously disappointed given that it's just over a 3% growth, you know, year on year. We'll touch a bit on that later in the presentation, which assets contributed positively and negatively. We have a cost of equity, we think, somewhere between 13 and 14%. You know, and as a team, we would look to exceed the growth in NAV per share, net NAV per share, in excess of our cost of equity. So significantly below, you know, what our target would be, despite obviously in part due to the difficult conditions. If you look at the EV EBITDA, has come down since the interims from 7.5 to 6.9, partly a function of some of the new assets that came into the portfolio, partly as a result of some of the valuations that we took down, you know, during the last 6 months. Capital invested once the Gondwana deal has completed will be about 1.6 billion rand, which takes us to being around 82% invested in terms of total assets. The net debt to EBITDA reduced slightly to 1.9 times, which we think is, you know, probably on the low end of where we would like to see leverage in the structure. Moving on to the portfolio overview. I won't dwell too much on slide six. It gives you an idea of the diversification both across the vintages that we're in and the sectors. I think one of the key messages though coming out of out of the manager is that I think sector diversification in itself doesn't always give you, well, probably gives you false comfort around, you know, your real diversification, particularly when, you know, many of the key drivers, certainly across some of our portfolio companies, have had a link to SA GDP. You know, over the last 2 to 3 years, we've re-looked at how we look at diversification, and I think we broadly break it down into three buckets. The first is geography and being more geographically diversified across markets with different, obviously, drivers from a macro perspective. Then looking at the core drivers behind each business, both from a macro perspective and equally a micro perspective. So again, ensuring that you don't have the same, you know, correlation amongst all of your core drivers in the portfolio. And the last one is around exit timeframe. So ensuring that you have a basket of assets that can be exited at different times in the cycle, you know, we think is important. But just looking at the pie chart on the right-hand side, obviously a pretty good diversification across sectors. And equally importantly, around about a 60-40 split, you know, if you look at the geographical split between South Africa and non-SA. Just talking about the assets that have been put on the books over the last 12 months, around about 867 million rand has been spent by Ethos Capital out of the 2.6 billion that I referred to earlier that Ethos has invested. So around about 33% or a third, you know, of Ethos's investments throughout the year has been contributed by Ethos Capital. The large assets that were put in the books during the last 12 months really revolved around Gammatek, just under 100 million, Channel VAS, which was a significant investment on behalf of Ethos Capital. Synalytic was the business that we bought out of Tor Industries and renamed it Synalytic. And then TimeBank, which was the deal done, as I mentioned earlier, by the AI fund. A deal soon to be closed, as I mentioned, is the bolt-on transaction of Gondwana in Echo, which across the two funds that we're invested in will increase our exposure to Echo by 152 million rand. So all in, a relatively, a year of, you know, decent amount of investment, just under a billion rand, you know, out of Ethos Capital. If you look at the key assets in the portfolio, so this is the contribution to total NAV. And the top six assets, which really encompass Channel VAS, Kevro, Echo, Prime Media, Synalytic, and Gammatek, constitute around 75% of the invested NAV, or about 60% of the total NAV, including cash. Those are the assets that we'll focus on in the presentation. So currently, Channel VAS is around 21% of total assets. Kevro, Echo, and Prime Media all around about the 10% mark, and Gammatek and Synalytic together constitute around about 5%. Equally importantly, if you look at the portfolio construction by age, which is important given that in the first year of ownership, in many cases, we keep the assets at the cost of investment, so we don't write them up. 18% of the portfolio is held in cash, and 36% of the assets are less than 1 year. So around about 54% of the portfolio is either held in cash or assets that are less than 1 year. Moving over to a bit more detail on some of the assets, I'll start with the exit of Eaton Towers. Eaton Towers will be a great exit for Fund Six. It was a business that was built on a couple of key investment themes around having a pan-African footprint. It was across five large sub-Saharan African countries, so not specifically in any single one. Very balanced portfolio, only had about 25%, 27% in one country. We obviously talk a lot about increasingly connected populations, be it through data and voice. It really played into that theme. And probably the most important one, and we'll talk a bit about the investment themes later that we're looking to invest behind, is having a scalable business model with multi-currency exposure. So it's a business that, if you look at it from when we bought it to when we exited, we grew the EBITDA threefold since 2015. We increased operating margins in that business by more than 50% from when we bought it to when we exited it. And we'll end up getting a great return out of that business of around 2.4 times money back. So we invested around 400 million. We'll get just short of R1 billion in proceeds from that business, which will generate just over a 23% return. So I think it really does talk to, businesses that have strong macro growth, good sector tailwinds, but also, and very importantly, a great management team that we've backed here. So it's an asset that we, obviously are not happy to see the back of. It's been a great business in our portfolio, but we really think it's one that's delivered a great return for our investors. And probably equally importantly from our side, it's given us a lot of comfort alongside the Pepsi transaction that you would have seen recently as well, that were high quality, great assets that have, businesses that are diversified across the continent. There is a lot of international interest. This business was bought by American Towers, so an American-based business. So for the right themes, the right businesses, particularly ones that are well managed, there still remains a lot of interest in the sector. Moving to the next slide, this is slide 10, talking about Channel VAS. Channel VAS is, as we've mentioned before, around about 21% of Ethos's NAV. It's had a great year. If I go through the key investment themes that we invest behind here, really were two or three key macro trends, which talk to financial inclusion, increasingly connected populations, and obviously a rising consumer spend across the continent. Channel VAS is across, four continents. It's in more than 25 countries. So again, talks to that theme of having uncorrelated currency exposure across the continent. And they've had six new deployments in the last year, which is a great result, new deployments being with new MNOs. It's gotten access to a customer base of 650 million people. I always have to pause when I say that number. 650 million is an extraordinary number of people that its models currently look to every single day in coming up and refining the pricing and the credit application scoring that it does across its AI platform. So it's got a massive scalable platform. It continues to grow. Its daily advances last year were up from $566 million to nearly $800 million, so a massive increase year on year. Default rates are extraordinarily low in the sector compared to its peer set, less than 1%, and quite a lot less than 1% in most cases. And pleasingly, EBITDA year on year on a like-for-like basis grew at more than 20% in dollars. So it's been a good asset. It's early days for us. We only invested in this business in October 2018. At the time, we agreed an option with the vendor to increase our stake from 17.5%, or actually from 17%, I think it is, it's a typo there, to 20%, so to buy an incremental 3%. It was done at the original offer price, so we haven't increased the price we pay. And obviously, with the 20% increase in EBITDA, it's effectively a 25% reduction in your entry multiple in that business. We've exercised that option. It'll be concluded at the end of September. And actually, with the dividends that we've received, we actually don't need to there'll be a very small drawdown on the fund. So it's actually been funded, the 3% option, through the dividends we've received. From a valuation perspective, we've kept the valuation largely unchanged. It's still less than a year in to our investment in this company. That said, the value change, it's grown in value by 53 million year on year, which is largely a reflection of the cash yield in the business. Channel VAS isn't geared. It's paid out dividends of around about 11% since we owned the business in October. So from that perspective, it's been very positive. We will take part of those dividends, which we've retained offshore, to exercise the option to increase our stake to 20%. So all in all, a very exciting opportunity. It talks to the trends of playing, you know, in growth themes, you know, on the continent. Great management team. Basim and his team have done a great job there. You know, and we look forward to growing, growing this business in time. I think that the biggest upside for this business is if we can get mobile financial services right. They run a number of pilots in West Africa and one in Pakistan, which are early days, but actually looking very promising. And again, if that comes up, you know, and comes up trumps, you know, that'll probably exceed the credit airtime services side of the business. So we remain very excited, and Roger in particular with Nick are looking at a number of insurance products that they can help Channel VAS grow. Moving on to the next key investment is Kevro. Kevro is around about 11% of Ethos Capital's NAV. The valuation up 9 million year on year, largely due to de-gearing. So we haven't changed the valuation at all. The de-gearing benefit of that was seen at around about 9 million rand. So in terms of the highlights of that business, obviously it's a weak economic environment, which has had an impact on the end customers. You know, there have been a number of challenges around services, but a lot of recent improvements, including the hiring of a new COO, really have arrested some of those issues. And there's been a pretty strong financial performance given the difficult market, to be honest. So that's revolved around new product strategies to drive growth, and we're seeing those come to fruition. So that has been good, and a real focus on working capital has seen us being able to de-gear and pay dividends out of this business. There's been a recent strategy review there and refinement of the operating cost model with the new COO being brought in. And in the next 12 months, there'll be a new warehouse and IT systems that we're investing behind, which we think will help grow and enhance the business. So we're going to be investing behind this business this year. Equally importantly, from a BE perspective, it managed to enhance its rating this year from a level 8 to level 4, which is massive in the context of the customers it serves. So we think the business is well set to grow, and we look forward to, you know, seeing the benefits of the CapEx cycle start to show. The next key asset in the portfolio on page 12 is Primedia. Primedia was a business we invested in really at the end of 2017, so beginning of 2018. A lot has happened in the last probably 12 to 18 months. Firstly, we sold off the Steyr Kinnickel Entertainment business. We then unbundled Steyr Kinnickel Theatres, the movie theatre business, outside of the broadcasting and outdoor business, so outside of Primedia, to the same shareholders, and really put a spotlight on that business. It had been massively underperforming in the broader Primedia portfolio. We brought in a new CEO, CFO, and chairman in the form of Andrew Marshall. The three of them done a great job of turning Steyr Kinnickel around. I think if you look at the EBITDA growth year on year in that business, it's around about 60%, and it's not because the slate has been any better this year than it was last year, to be honest. It's been driven by just running a business better and having some good operational efficiencies. We then restructured the balance sheet, refinanced the debt package on better terms. And then if you look at the underlying businesses, really what Primedia now remains is a broadcasting and outdoor business. It's been a very weak advertising market. I'm sure many of you know, particularly around radio. I think year-on-year radio spend was down around 67%. Importantly, one of our key drivers for getting into this asset was to arrest the decline in the market share in radio broadcasting that Primedia suffered over the last number of years. And pleasingly, that has happened this year, for the first year in a number of years, increased their market share and helped arrest the decline. So they were very much, you know, less down than the rest of the market year on year. That said, most corporate advertising budgets have been cut, and we're seeing lower occupancy on static billboards. Some of that's being offset. We've spent a huge amount of capital and continue to do so around, you know, digitizing the billboards. And obviously the yields you get and the prices that you can charge on those businesses are significantly higher than static. But static has been a problem in the outdoor business. So given those operating conditions, it really has been a pretty decent financial performance, a decent amount of de-gearing in the portfolio. We've kept the valuations largely flat. And if you look at the cash yield in Primedia now, it's probably in the order of 7.5% to 8%, year on year. So we kept the valuations. I think the valuations are slightly down. The de-gearing impact kept the valuation of Primedia flat, and Stericinacor was slightly up. Going forward, we've actually brought in a new digital expert. He runs a business, a radio and outdoor business in Turkey, and Ali brings with him a whole lot of digital expertise. And I think the next generation of things that we need to look to do in Primedia, need to be around that. So it's been great to have his insights on the board, and we look forward to his contribution there as well. Moving on to Echo. Echo is the corporate ISP business that we invested into back in February 2018. The current ownership of that is 31%. As you know, we've been looking for a number of, for probably the last 12 months, we agreed a deal to buy a business called Gondwana, which gives Echo presence in 9 sub-Saharan African countries, which are all benefiting from massive growth in connectivity. The market opportunity and the growth rates are huge, but you have to have presence on the ground. You need to be able to build customers in country and have your own systems in country to be able to really offer something to to certainly some of the larger customers in the Echo portfolio. We've seen a lot of very strong market share and market share growth in Echo's local business outside of the Gondwana business, and very, very significant revenue growth. You'll see one of the things in the highlights there that has continued this year. We invested in the sales force, and that really has created a lot of momentum. We've seen in the 87% of the 2020 target has already been achieved in the first 6 months. So that investment in the sales force is starting to pay off, and we really are starting to see good growth in market share in this business. There have been also appointments. A new CFO was brought in and a head of product innovation to help drive our strategic position with some of our key customers. And key to that has been the ability to have its first rating and a level 4 rating. So from not being rated at all, we worked with the company to get them to a level 4 rating, which is key, particularly in the South African context. We're very hopeful that the Gondwana transaction will close. It's just awaiting regulatory approval in Uganda. Out of the 9 countries, that should hopefully close in the next month or so. We've been working closely with the Gondwana team, and hopefully the integration of that really will be a game changer with respect to the client offering for this business. But in addition to Gondwana, there are a number of other acquisition opportunities we're looking at, one that we're relatively close to in Zambia, and there's also one in Kenya, which we're looking to close out on. So again, a very exciting business, really is growing well, and the themes that we invested behind starting to come to fruition. Moving on to Synalytic. Synalytic was the business we bought out of Tor Industries. The deal closed in April, so we've really only owned the company for a quarter. It's had a great start. It's trading above budget for its financial year for 2020. Its EBITDA grew by about 6% last year, but in addition to that, that's on a like-for-like basis. In addition, we took out a significant number of head office costs. So the business that we've got, we think, is much more lean and mean. We made an acquisition of Anglo Field Services at a multiple significantly below what we bought the business for. Really good adjacency, managed to integrate the team relatively well and in relatively short order, and we're starting to see growth around the complementarity of the customer bases. So, again, we're pretty excited about this business. John Hillary and his team, who we've brought in, they are doing a great job to reposition some of the underperforming, 2 or 3 of the underperforming portfolios in the greater Synalytic group, but we remain pretty confident that having exposure to 13 countries, around the Middle East and Sub-Saharan Africa, makes it a very, very difficult business to get into. The barriers to entry remain high, and we're starting to see the AI capability set that the company has come to fruition. So as it says there on page 14, they already do a significant number of their samples just through an AI process, and they can see that and the efficiencies coming from that, growing going forward. So pleasingly, despite only owning it for a relatively short period of time, the valuation on this business was up 13 million, so circa 14% growth, and that really reflects the head office savings that we've managed to extract from the business over the course of the last quarter. Gammatek, so turning to page 15, Gammatek's obviously seen the weak consumer environment, and really the post-paid uptrade cycle is getting longer. So people taking longer and longer to replace their phones on the trade side of things has impacted the business. The Huawei issue with the US-China trade war has obviously impacted sales of those phones as well. That said, it's been a pretty good performance from the business, both sales and EBITDA growth in mid-single digits, which is pleasing given the market conditions out there. The launch of the new iPhone should be positive for that business, and we're hoping to see the upside of that during the next couple of quarters. We finalized, or just in the process of finalizing, a new CFO for the business, who I think would be great, bringing some new professionalization to the firm. And we appointed an independent non-exec chairman who's already starting to, you know, help us reposition and grow the business. Again, successfully delivered on its BE charter, and obtained a level 4 rating. And whilst these things don't sound like, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into getting these ratings, improving that. Obviously, part of that is the rating that the mid-market fund brings. But if you can get that right, it really does change the nature of your interaction with your customers. And we're seeing that in the increasing proportion of exclusive customers that we have compared to our total customer base, which is obviously a great result. And there's a lot of innovation going around. For example, they've got a new app for non-Gamut Tech staff. So these are people working in a Cell C or an MTN store and getting commissions and working on this app so that they can get commissions from selling Gamut Tech's product. So lots of good things going on there, lots of new channels that are being targeted, relatively exciting. It's still, we've owned it for less than a year. It's still held at cost. As I said, most of our investments in the first year are held at cost. And we'd like to see, obviously, now that we've, you know, we're getting to that space where we can start to hopefully see a benefit in the upside of the valuation. Moving on to slide 16, Vertice. Vertice is the medtech business and the platform that we set up. Our first acquisition was in May 2018. Since then, we've grown the EBITDA just under threefold, 2.5 times since the first platform acquisition. That's a function of obviously organic growth, but also new products and acquisitions. So it's not all organic growth, unfortunately. And there's a really strong M&A pipeline. There's two deals that we're hopefully looking to close out probably in the next quarter. And really is proving out the thesis that if you can get a scalable platform, you can invest behind the AI and the technology, which we've done. You know, we spent a huge amount of time investing in IT systems. You can then scale this business up to something that can become, can have real critical mass and market leadership in the game that it plays. And the AI opportunity is huge. Roger's been working very closely with the team. We brought in a new CEO who had a very strong technology background, which has helped. And we really are starting to see the benefit of AI in twofold. One is in growing the business, so understanding where we can grow this business and what we can do, but equally excitingly, actually in the product side of things as well. So, you know, for example, monitoring heart rate monitors and the like in hospitals, et cetera. So lots of good opportunities here. It's a scalable business, 2 or 3 acquisitions that are lined up for the next quarter. And so we remain, you know, pretty excited about the prospects of growing this business. Just touching on the last two companies quickly. First one is MTN. I won't spend a huge amount of time on, other than when we sat at the interims, the share price at the time was around 80 Rand a share, and we'd written the asset down by 45 million, I think the number was. Pleasingly, the share price has performed stronger in the last 6 months. It's come back pretty much to our in price. So we're now marketing it just under 1x money, so a significant revaluation in the 6 months. Unfortunately, year on year, it ends up being flat. We've had a number of engagements with management. You know, we do believe some of their strategies are starting to bear fruit, and we look forward to hopefully an upward trajectory, you know, in this asset going forward as well. Touching on the last asset, which is the most recent acquisition by the AI fund in Time Bank, we've talked about, you know, playing, you know, the disruption thesis, doing things differently in sectors that have been around for a long time. Clearly, financial services and banking in particular has been around for ages. We do believe that Time Bank has a role to play, you know, in that space. Its business model, you know, has started to prove itself. It's already had 770,000 customers since November, which, according to Roger, is the second highest of any startup fintech business globally. So clearly, they've got something right with their model. You know, they've got a very large distribution footprint through the Pick and Pay relationship, so access to 700 stores, 14,000, you know, tellers effectively through the till points, and a cost-to-income ratio target of pretty much just under half that of the incumbent bank. So clearly there's lots of water to flow under the bridge here, but it really does talk to the themes that we've talked about: financial inclusion, smartphone technology, disruptive technology, and particularly around AI and working with Roger and Nick, is how you do the lending side of your business really is going to be driven by, you know, some of the learnings we've actually had from Channel Vass as well, is how can you lend profitably into this, the lower end of the market space. Then just talking about, it's all good to talk about the companies that have done well. So thankfully, most of the companies have performed well, but there's three companies in particular that have had a really tough last 12 months, and particularly probably last 6 months. So I thought it was worth just touching on those. The three assets are AutoZone, TwinSaver, and Easy. If you look at all of those, I mean, together they contribute 8% of NAV. So, you know, it's obviously, it's not great that they've underperformed, but they're a relatively insignificant part of the total NAV. But the write-down across these three assets has been around 67 million rand, you know, over the last 12 months, which is around about 40-odd cents a share. If you look at one thing that's common to all of them, obviously we can talk there about, you know, some of the industry factors, and you know, those are there and we need to counteract them. I think there have been a number of own goals as well, to be honest, so we put those down under the controllables there. You know, some of the, whether it be operational efficiencies, overcapacitation, investment in stock in the form of easy access, or just poor category planning and inventory management. There have been a number of own goals. We've bought in, if you look across all of these three under the what has Ethos done over the last 12 months, common to all of them are, one, new management. So we've bought in new management across the lot. Secondly, a strategic reset. So sitting down with the new management team to say, how do we turn this around? What are we going to do differently? Third, operating cost reduction. So across the three of those businesses, we've reduced costs of 160 million rand in total. And the last one is a debt reset. So putting enough capital behind these businesses to enable them to reach their potential. Those have happened over the last 12 months. We are starting to see green shoots of recovery. So, you know, the recovery plan in AutoZone, budget year on year is for a pretty significant increase in EBITDA. TwinSaver started to see significant improvements in operating efficiencies and sales volumes. And for the first time in a long time, even some positivity around, pricing with the retailers. So from a run rate perspective, it's looking a lot more positive. And Easy has really turned, you know, relatively quickly, to be honest. It's successfully diversified away from construction. So that's moved from about 54% of revenue to 46%. It's focused on reducing its investment in new stock and utilizing the capacity of the stock that it's currently got. So whilst over the last 12 months, you know, these three have been a drag on the valuations, we're relatively hopeful, you know, that we've seen the bottom end of that going forward. Just turning to looking forward, you know, what are the investment strategies or trends that we as a firm are looking to back? And I won't go into them all in detail. I've sort of set out on the page what they are and on the right-hand side which portfolio companies talk to those themes. But clearly, an important one is LSM migration and what that leads to from a consumer goods perspective. I think Bevco really talks to that theme in the lower LSM space, as does Gammatech. Growing connectivity and data access. So Eaton Towers was a classic case, you know, of that portfolio company. Echo as well. Lowest cost to serve, scalable businesses. We think Synalytic is one of those. High differentiated services. Vertice, very difficult to get into once you build a scalable platform. And then technology-driven disruption to business as usual. So Channel Vass and TimeBank really are classic examples of taking existing businesses, doing something differently, whether it be using AI or something similar, to create a moat around your business. And the last one is businesses that we can scale across countries. So very importantly, we don't want to be seen as a single country exposure. So Echo with its 9 countries across Africa, Channel Vass in 25 countries, and Synalytic across 13 really gives you great access to some high growth sub-Saharan African countries, you know, without taking single country currency or political risk. That said, across all of these, the one that we would add to that would be, you know, deep value opportunities that have cyclical upside. And we've probably in our portfolio, if you look at the pipeline, I'd say at least 40% of the deals that we're looking at really do have that thesis hanging over them. So in addition to those 6 or 7 key themes, you know, the deep value thesis at this point in the cycle is one we're focused on. Moving quickly onto the valuation page, so page 22. You will have seen some of these charts before, so again, I won't dwell on them. The current NAV being 1134. Of that, invested capital is currently 906, but once the Gondwana deal is done, it's around 10 rand, which will leave cash of about 1.31. That makes us 88% invested. That's on an NAV per share basis. It's 82% on a total assets basis. And the discount, this is as at June, when the share price was 780, is around 31%. The key valuation metrics, we've reduced the valuation multiple across the portfolio. It's now 6.9 times EBITDA, and we'll go into a bit more detail on that later. The net debt to EBITDA is pretty low, which we think is pretty good for this point in the cycle, but you know, probably at the bottom end of what we would look to have of 1.9 times. And the discount to the peer group, so where we value against a peer group of companies, is also, and it's a coincidence, also at 31%. Moving just to page 23, so to highlight what that means from a value perspective, on the left-hand side we show, if, for example, the valuation of the portfolio, the peer group companies that we value our portfolio companies against was 100. We apply a series of discounts to that to move you to, you know, just 31% would move, our valuation would be at 69. The current market value of that portfolio is currently at 48. That's a 31% mark, the discount to NAV. So effectively, the implied market valuation of our companies is around, you know, 50% less than the peer groups they're valued against. On the right-hand side at the top, you know, we look at an NAV. So if you start with 1134, you've got 228 of cash and 906 of invested NAV. And the current portfolio has a valuation of 6.9. You effectively are valuing the equity at 5 times. What it does, if you take this current share price of 780 as at June, you take the same 228, you've got an invested NAV effective valuation of R5.52, which implies that the market implied valuation on the portfolio is not 6.9, but actually 4.8, which is a PE of just under 7 times across the portfolio. What we thought, you know, averages are massively distorting. So on page 24, we thought we'd just highlight, you know, despite the difficult growth environment, you know, how have the portfolio companies performed? There's 19 portfolio companies. We show it both by number of companies, which is the number you see there, but also by value to give you an idea of where we've invested most of our capital. So starting at the top left, what you can see is 75% of the companies actually grew revenue year on year, which despite the difficult conditions, we think is a pleasing from a portfolio perspective. There were 4 companies that went backwards year on year, but predominantly 75% of the companies grew. If you look on an EBITDA basis, that talks to the theme that we talked about earlier of costs going up higher than revenues. Only 50% of the portfolio companies grew EBITDA year on year. But probably quite pleasingly from our perspective is if you look at the chart number 6, you know, more than 15% growth in EBITDA, 40% by value of our companies are growing by more than 15% a year. So despite difficult conditions, I think it talks to the diversity of the portfolio, both by country and also by sector. So 50% of the companies grew by EBITDA, and 40% of those grew by more than 15% year on year. The net debt to EBITDA, we only have about 20-odd percent of our companies that have more than 3 times gearing, which at this point in the cycle we think is right. That means, you know, circa 80% of our companies have gearing less than 3 times, and 33% have no gearing. So they have very high free cash flow conversion in some of those businesses, and you know, we'd hope to see dividend flow coming back from those portfolios. Bottom right, what it shows, this is we split out the assets by EV EBITDA. This is the market implied EV EBITDA. So effectively, 75% of the portfolio is valued at less than 5.5 times EBITDA, if you take the first two charts. So we think that's low. You know, we're looking at ways we can reduce the discount, but that's the effective price at the moment would suggest that you know, there's a very significant derating of the portfolio by, you know, by the market. And then just quickly on the portfolio, if we turn to page 25, if you look at the portfolio company returns, so these are returns since we own the assets. And what you can see, those companies on the left that have a number more than 1 times effectively shows value accretion, so positive value contribution. Around about 60% of our portfolio companies are in that bucket. 10% of our portfolio companies are held at cost just because we've only just acquired those businesses within the last year. So effectively 70% of our companies have value, you know, are value accretive to the portfolio. But there are still 30% of the companies that have been, you know, had a negative value impact. The ones that I pointed out to you were AutoZone, Easy and TwinSaver, you know, have a pretty significant impact over the last 12 months. Turning briefly then to liquidity analysis, we get a lot of questions from investors talking about, you know, how does the board manage its liquidity or how do they think about it? On page 27, we just set out for you, you know, what is the current exposure in terms of commitments to the underlying funds. You will see there, for example, in Fund 6, it's nearly fully invested. There's very little uncommitted or undrawn commitments in that, whereas, for example, in the mid-market fund, we've got $360 million of undrawn commitments to that fund, or take Fund 7 as an example, $887 million. So if you took on the right-hand side, we currently have commitments of 3161, so just over 3 billion rand. We've currently drawn just about half of that, and so we have outstanding commitments of about 1.5 billion rand. What I'll do over the next couple of pages is explain to you how do we look at the liquidity and what does it mean from, you know, the perspective of being able to manage our commitments going forward. Just turning to page 28 quickly, we do a huge amount of benchmarking on liquidity based on what we consider the top five European comparators in the listed private equity space. Those are Harbourvest, HG Capital, Apax, Princess, and Pantheon. There's two ways that they all manage their liquidity, so they run a very similar model to ours. The first is a total commitment ratio. That's your invested capital plus your undrawn commitments divided by your net asset value. Obviously, you want that number to be as low as possible. Again, we're at about 163%. Again, if you look across the peer set, not out of line, but probably slightly higher than the peer set. The second ratio is what they call a commitment coverage ratio, which takes your debt facilities into account. So you take your cash plus your unutilized debt facilities over your undrawn commitments, and obviously you want that number to be as low as possible. Again, I think, again, on an average, we're slightly below average in this space. So not out of line with the market and our comparative peer set. Turning to page 29, however, what we've tried to show here is how the board looks from a liquidity perspective. We've got a very detailed model which looks asset by asset, fund by fund. When are we putting assets on? When are we likely to exit? What's the likely exit multiple on those businesses? What are the returns likely to be? So it's a pretty convoluted model. But to try and take you through it at a high level, our total commitments from the previous page that I mentioned was 3161. In all of those funds, you will always never be drawn at 100% because obviously fees are drawn within a fund as well. So we pay our fees separately through the model, so we need to adjust for that. So the fees adjustment is around about 300 million, 308. So our effectively net commitments to those funds is about 2.85 billion rand. We've currently invested capital of 1452. We have cash of 493. A debt facility of 500, and treasury shares, to the extent that we were allowed to reissue them to the market, of around 69 million, which would give you a commitment gap of around 339 million. What does that mean? That means if today all of the funds we invested on called their capital, we would be short for 339 million rand. The reality, as you can see by the pie chart at the top of the page, is the outflows over the next 5 years that we've modeled, you know, it's not all going to happen in year one. So we've tried to model, and what we set out above is 32% of the outflows will happen in 2020, 19 in 21, 19 in 2022. That's the basis of the model. And as you can see on the right-hand side of the page, the important numbers to focus on are those red charts which talk to available liquidity. So that's, even in 2022, the available liquidity at that point would be around 293 million rand. So that's pretty much how the board looks at it. You know, they are very focused on liquidity. They're continuously looking at ways to enhance liquidity. This is based off current commitments only. So to the extent we add additional commitments to the book, that would change. Or if there are, you know, new transactions that come our way, you know, that may precipitate a different engagement with shareholders. But based on what we know today, on our current commitments, you know, there's no need for further capital outside of our equity and our debt facilities. Just moving on to one of the last charts that we were asked to, you know, do by shareholders as well is to look at the discount that we trade at to NAV. So this is the share price discount. And most importantly, you know, a lot of questions asked, you know, what is the board's view on the discount? The board, we had a board meeting last week. Of the 6 hours of board meeting, I would say at least 2.5 were spent around how do we sort out the discount? Are there things that we can be doing from a strategic perspective, a structural perspective, from a capital allocation perspective? I think the points to take away from this chart, just at very bland points, is, you know, if you take the European peer set that we show there, you know, from HG all the way to private equity holdings there, the average discount in Europe is around 18%, 1.8. If you look at the average discount around in South Africa, that number is nearly double. So 36%, Currently, we trade at 33% discount. And what we also show in this chart, the red dots there are the NAV growth. So I think the most important point, there's a really good correlation between NAV growth and your discount. So the focus of management, certainly from an ethos perspective, is to grow NAV on a net basis by above your cost of equity. And if you're able to do that, you should trade at a premium to your NAV, but certainly, if not, certainly narrow the discount. So the focus from the manager's perspective is to grow NAV. From a board perspective, it's really around capital allocation, including buybacks. How do we allocate capital? If you've got the opportunity to buy back shares compared to putting it into a new fund, you know, really looking at what incremental return do you need not to buy back shares. So that's a huge focus of the board. Other strategic options to increase size and liquidity is important, and the board continues to look at that. And then lastly, increasing transparency with investors. And I hope you would have seen over the last 12 months, you know, we spent a huge amount of time trying to increase the transparency, whether it be around liquidity, valuations, unpacking the portfolio companies with the investors to help bring some transparency, you know, to enable investors to make better choices. So just in conclusion, just moving to the outlook slide, unfortunately, I'd love to be able to sit here and say that the South African macros are likely to change anytime soon. I think we're realistic. I think we don't see any short-term improvement. That said, the portfolio companies have really, in many cases, borne the brunt of the last probably 18 months, 2 years of tough environments, have started to turn the corner, and we're starting to see real benefits coming out of some of the actions that have been taken over the last 18 months. So we haven't got our head in the sand. We're not banking on operational performance. If it comes, that would be fantastic. But I still think it really lends itself in this environment to looking for great, high-quality businesses to buy, you know, at very reasonable multiples. Outside of South Africa, it's obviously a very different thesis, significant growth rates across the continent. The key issue we remain focused on, particularly as a manager, is around how do you manage, you know, the currency and political risks, which we think remain elevated. Been very strong devaluations in most countries across the continent. So being able to manage those issues and hopefully price in dollars, you know, is a key risk mitigant that we look at. We do think there's likely to be NAV growth over the next 12 months, just in the fact that the portfolio is now 80% invested, is moved through that one-year cycle, and we will start to see benefits in NAV growth despite the difficult environment. And as we said, the pipeline remains very strong, but we can remain very selective on deals, and I think that's the key issue that makes a good investment. If you can buy good investments at the right – good deals, good businesses at the right price, over time you will make decent returns. Liquidity management remains a key focus of the board, as I've mentioned, and looking at ways to enhance shareholder value. Buybacks do form a part of that. It forms part of the whole overall liquidity assessment. And then the board continues to also focus on other strategic options that could unlock value for shareholders. So the board has a very wide-ranging view on how we can try and narrow the discount, and hopefully some of those will come to fruition over the next 12 months. So again, thank you very much. You know, it's been a tough year. It's good to see that the portfolio has gone up. We're not happy that it's not gone up in line with our cost of equity. That is our target for, you know, the next 12 months. But we really do, you know, remain very appreciative of the support we've had from shareholders. And we remain very open to having any discussions with shareholders around any of the issues, either today or, you know, on a one-on-one basis. You know, we remain significantly open for that. With that, I'll turn it over and if there are any questions to be answered.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you'd like to ask a question, you're welcome to press star and then one on your touchtone phone or the keypad on your screen, at which time you'll hear a confirmation tone. Following this process will place you in the question queue. If you decide your question has been addressed and wish to withdraw your question, you're welcome to press star then two on your touchtone phone to remove yourself from the question queue. And just a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, you're welcome to press the star and then one. For the benefit of the participants who have joined via the webcast, you're welcome to pose your question on the question box provided on your screen. There are no questions on the conference line at this stage. I would like to hand over to the questions from the webcast. Thank you.
Judith, thank you. It's Rowan speaking. I'm going to ask the questions that came through on the webcast in written form, and then Peter will respond. First question is from Omri Thomas of ABAX. Could you please expand on your comments that Sterk Kinnecor is unbundled to shareholders? Does it mean that Ethos now owns Sterk Kinnecor directly rather than through Primedia?
Yes, Omri, that's exactly right. So we unbundled it. When we first came in, we did a strategic analysis of the key drivers behind the various businesses. We recognized that this business didn't have any of the same key drivers. It was an unloved business within that space. And what we effectively undertook to do is to just unbundle the shares all to the same shareholders. So we own it now exactly our same proportions as we do with Prime Media. But we brought in a new CEO, CFO, and chairman. I then sit on that board, and we actually focus on that company and how we can drive value in that company separate from Prime Media. So it was effectively unbundled to shareholders. We own it in our same proportion that we did previously, but it's got a microscope on it, and it really has seen great, you know, great growth as a result.
Second question, there are two from Neil Brown of Electus. The first one is that the three companies that were bought by Ethos Capital and written down, being AutoZone, TwinSaver, and Easy, were already owned by Ethos Funds. Did you overpay for them?
Neil, it's a great question, and there's many facets to that. The first question is absolutely, well, did Ethos overpay for those assets? I think not Ethos Capital or the mid-market fund coming in. I think at the time when we came in, the mid-market fund, which we're invested through, paid exactly the same price that Fund 6 had paid. So there wasn't an arbitrage on the pricing that we came in at from an Ethos Capital perspective. The first year of ownership of those assets, even after we were in, we're very positive on those businesses. You will remember, I think AutoZone was probably up, you know, 15-odd percent in that first year. TwinSaver, probably 8 or 9%, and maybe Easy was flat, I can't remember. But so the first 12 months was a pretty positive outlook and lent itself to why we had invested into those businesses. All three of them have been hit by different factors, and some of them have been own goals, to be honest. So, you know, if you say, did you overpay? You know, if some of those mistakes are our own mistakes, you know, you can't blame it on what you paid. I think in retrospect, though, yeah, we probably did overpay for those assets. But importantly, you know, from an Ethos Capital perspective, we didn't overpay relative to where, you know, Fund 6 had got in. I think we've made some mistakes in those assets. If we're honest with ourselves, I think we've invested behind a lot of capacity in TwinSaver to make it the lowest cost provider there. But at the end of the day, you know, if the market's tough, maybe it was the wrong time to make that investment call. So, you know, I think we look at ourselves and we take it very personally. So I don't think it's necessarily only about overpaying. I think we did know those assets. It transpired 12 months into our investment that we got the thesis wrong, and we're working very hard to resolve it. But, you know, it's not something we're particularly happy about.
A second question from Neil of Electus is, with the key AI work that Roger and Nick are doing in many of the investee companies, how are they locked in by Ethos and incentivized?
Yeah, so it's been great to work with Roger and Nick. I mean, they're great guys. They bring a different perspective to us as investors, but also to the firm. In the AI fund, they are the two key partners. And so, as with all of our funds, the partners are locked in by the fact that, you know, they have all the carry. Most of the carry in the fund would go to them. Secondly, the two of them have put a huge amount of their own capital, around about 80 million rand, I think the number is, into the fund. So, you know, they're significantly invested, you know, in that as well. So it's really around that. No different to any of our other funds. They're like, you know, Tourney would be in Fund 7. You know, they're locked in through being partners in that fund with effectively where they get the carry, and they've invested very significantly behind it as well.
Another question from Charles of Titanium. On page 29, can you please clarify the fee adjustment?
Yeah, Charles, relatively simply put, in each of the funds, let's say you invest 100 Rand into a fund, you would only ever draw down 90 Rand for actual commitments into the underlying assets, and 10% would always be withdrawn for fees or rainy day provisions. In our modeling, we do the fees separately. So we would never be, as our commitment to, let's say, Fund 7, we'd only ever be hit on 90% of our commitment in effect. So our net commitment is our real exposure to that. So that fees adjustment really just takes account of the fact that in each of the funds that we're invested in, we won't be drawn down for fees because we do fees separately, and therefore our real commitment is, call it 90% of the commitment to that fund.
Thanks. There are no further questions on the webcast. Judith, back to you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, just a final reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, you're welcome to press star and then one. And for the benefit of the participants who have joined via the webcast, you're welcome to pose your question via the question box provided on your screen. We have no questions from the lines. Has anything come up on the webcast?
No.
Sir, we have no questions from the lines or the webcast. Do you have any closing comments?
No. Thank you very much for your time, guys.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Ethos Capital, that concludes today's conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.